This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got three absolutely tremendous hours for you. Not necessarily the world's biggest slate of baseball in the world for this Monday, but we've got eight solid games. We're going to be breaking all those down. We have to take a look back at what we saw this weekend in Major League Baseball. We've got some teams ascending. We've got some teams declining. We've got some players declining player options, and we've got some players accepting player options in the NBA. We'll dive in a lot on that in 15 minutes. As Nick Whalen, he does such tremendous work here at the network. He is one of the hosts of Prop Points. He is going to be joining me, and we're going to be taking a look at the fact that LeBron James, he has opted in with the Lakers, but a little bit of a caveat there. We just saw DeAndre Ayton. Apparently, it looks like he's going to be getting a buyout, and he's going to be on the market as well. So we're going to be discussing where he might be landing. Could that be the Lakers center of the future? Could it be someone else? I know that there have been some ties to perhaps Walker Kessler and so many others. So we're going to be talking about that and so much more. We're going to have him aboard for two segments, and we'll get some of his thoughts with regards to the NBA draft as well. Might not go a ton on the NBA draft, but I know that he does such a tremendous job of being able to gauge this great game of basketball. And I'm obviously a college basketball guy, so I got to see a lot of those guys up close and in person. So we're going to be talking about that with him in about 15 minutes. And then Connor Mack, he is a tremendous handicapper. He's over at Pub Sports Radio. He's going to be joining me in a little bit over 2 hours. We're going to be breaking down this Monday slate of baseball with him, try to see if there's been any trends that he has been really taking a liking to. And for those that have been noticing my hosting over the last week or so, it's a game that is sweeping the nation. It is Greg's Random Football Roulette. I am previewing all 32 teams here over the next 16 nights. We're on night number 5. We've got two more teams that we need to preview. I'm doing this because it is in honor of our NFL betting guide that is going to be out July 1st, and now is a perfect time to be able to dive in if you're looking to become a VSiN Pro subscriber, because that guide, it is going to be coming out on Tuesday. I'm going to have my full projections with regards to my odds to be able to make the playoffs. I'm going to be having my odds out in terms of all 14 teams that I do think are going to be making the postseason, and every single one of us here at the network that are hosting these shows, what have you, you're going to be getting so many of our picks for the upcoming season. You got a lot of futures plays, and you want to be able to get on this guide right away, so that way you're able to extract the most out of the futures market. You get season win total breakdowns, best bets, and so much more. For just $175, you get everything that we do here at the network all the way through the Super Bowl. That includes baseball. That gets you through a lot of the college basketball season as well, because the Super Bowl, that goes all the way through February. So your smartest NFL bets of the season starts right now, VSiN.com/subscribe. So we're going to get you guys Greg's Random Football Roulette, and that is going to be a grand old time. And it was a grand old time on Sunday Night Baseball. Saw this game conclude actually now a little bit more than an hour ago. It was not a long game, because Tarik Skubal, he just fanned a whole bunch of Minnesota Twins. 7 innings, 13 strikeouts, gives up 1 hit. The Tigers, they get the job done by a count of 3-0. And right now for the Detroit Tigers, they do stand as a top team in the American League. And in a year that it just feels like it is very wide open out there in the American League, the Astros are actually now your number 2 team in the American League. They've really been able to surge 50-34. I think that this is something that you want to take a look at. Maybe it's just what I've been noticing this season. Big time home and road splits in Major League Baseball. You look at a lot of these top teams, and a lot of these top teams have not been able to get the job done on the road. The Detroit Tigers are one of those exceptions. If you're above 500 on the road this season, you should be treated like gold right now, because for the Detroit Tigers, 20-13 on the road, 30-14 at home. So they're obviously getting the job done over at Comerica, but you take a look at some of these other teams, like the Blue Jays, for example. Right now, they'd be making the wild card. They're only 3 games back of the New York Yankees in the division, 25-16 at home, 20-22 on the road. Another interesting team that I find is the Houston Astros. They're 32-14. They're that number 2 team in the American League, 18-20 on the road. This is part of the reason why I feel so bullish about this team, the Tampa Bay Rays, because as we know, they've been playing in that minor league ballpark thus far this season. Now, because of the way that the weather is in Tampa, they very much front-loaded a lot of their home games. They're going to be playing a lot of games on the road. Might not be to their detriment, because you'll even recall when they were playing over at the Trop, they were always a relatively good road team and felt like they weren't necessarily having the home field advantage that you'd expect. 27-13 at home, 20-14 on the road. One of the better bullpens you're going to find in the big leagues, aside from Friday when they gave up the 22 runs to the Baltimore Orioles. That was less than savory, but I mean, a lot of these other teams, you just have some trust issues with them. Like, a big reason why I just can't see the Atlanta Braves being able to make a postseason run this season is because they're 23-17 at home, getting the job done there. 15-28 on the road. If you're looking for what's wrong with the Atlanta Braves, star, underline, highlight, whatever you want to do, that road record, there you go. Like the Milwaukee Brewers, 27-17 at home, despite the fact that they are number one in the big leagues in terms of runs per game away from home, just 20-20. Heck, you even take a look at the New York Mets, 29-12 at home, 19-25 on the road. I do think that that's something that you do want to be highlighting, and these teams are able to get the job done on the road. They're teams that they might be able to get the job done for you, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Eaves Peterson, right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And now I do think it's that time as well, with just us getting these teams with about 82, 83 or so games played. Like, this is the official, if you're looking at actual games perspective, the halfway point of the MLB season. As we know, that official halfway point for a lot of people is the All-Star break. By then, you have more like 95, 100 games played. That's going to be coming up within the next few weeks. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, we have reached a half point of the season, and you just have so many teams that are alive for these wild card spots, and you really just don't have a lot of teams that are in air quotes, you're dead. If you look at the American League right now, all but three teams are within 4.5 games of a playoff spot, and even one of those teams, the Baltimore Orioles, they're 7 games back. I don't think they should be buyers at the trade deadline. I think that there's just too much wrong with this team. I don't really have a lot of faith in them, but I mean, perhaps management, after they completely fumbled the offseason, they got absolutely no pitching whatsoever. They left Corbin Burns to go to the Arizona Diamondbacks, which is not looking like such a bad decision anymore. Like, it looked really bad at the time, but hey, you wouldn't be getting Corbin Burns out there right now. Now, maybe different situation, starts in a different game, what have you. I mean, if ifs were fifths, we would all be drunk, but you know what? He's right now injured, so that looks a little bit better for them, but still a lot of, shall we say, fumbles, I think is the best way of putting it, with the Orioles. But I mean, who says that a team like the Kansas City Royals, who has been dead last in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, if they get a bat or two at the deadline, that they can't surge up and be able to make a little bit of a run? Same goes for the Walker Texas Rangers. Like, for as bad as the Rangers have been on offense, and boy, have they been bad. Corey Seager, it looks like he's starting to round into form. Pair of home runs over the weekend against the Seattle Mariners. You've got a pitching staff that is actually performing very well, headlined by one Mr. Jacob DeGrom. Like, they're going to be getting Tyler Molly back as well. He's been out for the last few weeks. Who says they can't make a run? The LA Angels are one game below 500, and they're 2 games out of that final wild card spot. And I can't sit here and say that I think that the Angels are going to make some playoff run. I have no faith whatsoever in that bullpen. You're starting Tyler Anderson, Jack Conowitz, and Kyle Hendricks. Like, that pitching is atrocious. And yet, here they are weaseling their way around, and they're still somehow, some way in the playoff hunt. Like, this is an incredibly weak playoff, and I mean, it's pretty much a case of, it feels like a lot of people are being served this playoff spot on a silver platter. They're saying, no thanks, I'm waiting, I'm watching my figure, and we shall see which of these teams decides that they want to go out there and take it. For as horrible as things are for the Boston Red Sox right now, like, ever since Rafael Devers got traded, they've had no offense whatsoever aside from Saturday. They're still 3 games out, and they've got a lot of money freed up with trading away Rafael Devers. Who says they don't make a move at the deadline in about 4 or so weeks? So you've got a lot of intrigue there. And then in the National League, it's strong. It's very strong. The San Diego Padres, the San Francisco Giants, both a game to a game and a half back of the St. Louis Cardinals. And you do want to look at some of these teams that might progress slash regress. Now, for the Padres, I don't think that the run differential is a end-all be-all, but only a plus 17 there. The Reds, if you're looking at things like that, they're actually better than the first wildcard team, and that would be the New York Mets. And we do have to have our question marks, in my opinion, about this New York Mets team. They go out there over the weekend against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mentioned that road record. Completely shellacked. I mean, completely shellacked. They lost that series 30-4 against the Pittsburgh Pirates, who entered into that series dead stinking last in the National League in terms of runs per game. We do have to wonder if this was a little bit smoke and mirrors from the Mets to begin the season. But even if it was smoke and mirrors, guess what? For one, reinforcements are going to be on the way. Kodai Senga, Sean Manaea, they should be returning sooner rather than later. And we have to look at the pockets of one Mr. Steve Cohen. You know that he's going to be spending money. You know that he's going to do everything humanly possible to get things upgraded. Now, the big question is, are these going to be upgrades? Like, a lot of people are talking, oh, Sandy Alcantara is probably going to be on the move. Have you seen Sandy Alcantara this year? Like, this is not the same Cy Young Award winner. Now, you're going to have him under control for multiple years. If that's a play for 2026, 2027, absolutely tremendous. Now, if that's a play for 2025, might not be getting the bang for your buck that you deserve. Now, is he better than Frankie Montas? Probably. If you saw Frankie Montas today, and if you saw the north of 12 ERA that he had in his minor league rehab appearances, I recognize that in your minor league rehab appearances, you're working on things, it's not an end-all be-all. I don't care who you are, if you consider yourself a professional and you're having a 12 ERA against guys at the AA and AAA level, you should probably be looking yourself in the mirror. And it's not like Frankie Montas over the last 3 years has been the Mona Lisa Vito of pitching, so that's a aspect that is hurting the Mets team right now. Having Trout out there as well, Paul Blackburn for stars, that's a little bit of an issue as well. So there should be a little bit of alarm here. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, they are really the team I think is so interesting in the National League, because I do think that the Dodgers are still the team to beat in the National League. I don't think that there's a lot of denying that. The Cubs, they've got a rock-solid offense. The bullpen has been very good. But this Philadelphia Phillies team, if you get them in a 5- or 7-game series, Ranger Suarez is right now looking like one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. And I know that he missed part of the season. Should we be considering him right now for the Cy Young Award? And I say that because over his last 10 starts, he has allowed 9 earned runs. He has been as valuable to his team ever since his first start where he got roughed up as any pitcher in all of baseball, including Tarik Skubal. He has been that good for the Philadelphia Phillies, especially considering their bullpen. A man that is very valuable to us. So Nick Whalen does great work here at the network. We're talking NBA with him next right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by this man as he joins me on the Progressive Guest Line. It is Nick Whalen. He does tremendous work here at the network. He is one of the hosts of Prop Points. You're able to catch that 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Does great work over at RotoWire and just is a savant when it comes to taking a look at the game of basketball. Nick, always great to get you aboard. Thank you.
Always good to be here, man. Savant might be a little bit strong. I would not say I'm a basketball savant necessarily, but I appreciate you having me on as always, man, and looking forward to talking some hoops for these next couple segments.
You are correct, but I felt like sage would make you sound a little bit too old, as we know. That might be a little bit aging yourself, so we will go with savant for the time being. We will try to think of another word when we hit the break, but you know what? There is no break if you're looking at the NBA because free agency is coming upon us. We've got ourselves a lot of moves that have already happened, and a little bit less than an hour before we came on this show, it was revealed that DeAndre Ayton and the Portland Trailblazers are working on a buyout, and need to get your thoughts here because with the LA Lakers, as we know, they are in the market for a center, and this could be a landing spot for DeAndre Ayton.
It most certainly could be, Greg, and I think this would be kind of a bailout potentially for the LA Lakers. Now, it would likely require DeAndre Ayton to be willing to take somewhat of a discount to end up in LA. It kind of remains to be seen just how much of a market there will be for DeAndre Ayton, but this is a pretty rare situation in general. I mean, Ayton was entering the final year of his contract, but we're talking about a buyout of, you know, north of $35 million, right? I mean, that was essentially a max contract at the time that he signed it. So, you know, from the Portland perspective, obviously they draft Hanson Yang. I think it was 16 overall the other night in the NBA draft, but this really clears the path for Donovan Clingan for this next season and kind of lays the foundation for the next generation of this Blazers team. The Ayton landing spot, though, is far more interesting. And I think the Lakers will have some competition. It is worth noting that DeAndre Ayton has the same agent as Luka Doncic. So certainly the Lakers should be viewed as the front runner. You know, we saw the Lakers maneuvering on Thursday night, you know, moving up twice in the second round. They ended up taking a Adoniro out of Arkansas, which is a fine pick to me, but I don't know if you could look at that guy and say, all right, we need you to be our starting center, or, you know, be a guy that we can depend on for 25 plus minutes. And our goal is to win a title next season. Like DeAndre Ayton, I think reputation wise has obviously taken a pretty big hit over these last couple of years, but he's still really effective. He puts up numbers. He was a member of a Suns team that went to the NBA finals a few years ago. He's certainly not the player that some thought he would be coming out of Arizona, but you look around at what the Lakers' other options are right now. We're talking, you know, bringing in Brook Lopez, who's like 38 years old, you know, Clint Capella, who feels like his best years are behind him. If the Lakers could get a deal done with DeAndre Ayton, I mean, this would be a best case scenario for LA.
Yep, I think so as well. I think that this would be a great landing spot for them. I know that I've heard a few other names for the Lakers, but it feels like this might be the most ideal one. And just how important is it for the Lakers to be a lockdown to center? Because we did see LeBron James opt into his $53.5 million player option, but it came with a little bit of a caveat that he wants to see what the Lakers do this offseason.
Yeah, it feels like we're back in, you know, 2016, 2018 LeBron, right? Where that version of him constantly putting pressure on the organization really seemed like it faded away for the most part once he came to LA, right? You know, he goes from, you know, going to the finals, what was it, 9 straight years with Miami and Cleveland, and all of a sudden he gets to LA and feels a little bit more relaxed. He's not putting pressure on the Lakers. You know, it doesn't seem like it's, you know, title or bust every single year. And now for whatever reason, you know, LeBron does feel like he needs to do that. And, you know, of course, he's picking up the player option. He's telling the Lakers, look, I'm not necessarily interested in a long-term deal right now. I'm not giving any discounts. I think he senses that the Lakers, you know, kind of have their future piece in Luka Doncic, of course, and now LeBron James is no longer the top priority. And look, the Lakers operate as a business, right? Obviously, they want to win as many titles as they can. They're trying to compete next season, but they're also lining things up for the future of this franchise around Luka. So to me, you know, that messaging from LeBron and Rich Paul is essentially reminding the Lakers, hey, we still have a goal to accomplish next season. You know, it's beyond, you know, just re-signing Luka Doncic, looking ahead to 26, 27, 28, and beyond, because obviously at some point, you know, LeBron is not going to be in the NBA anymore. It still seems like he's years away from that, but the clock is ticking on LeBron James' career. So we're seeing him kind of pull out the old playbook, put some pressure on the organization. I don't know what this is ultimately going to result in. You know, I think the Lakers would be interested in DeAndre Ayton regardless. You know, I don't, there's only so much the Lakers can do in terms of cap space, in terms of potential trades they can swing this offseason. But of course, when LeBron says something like that, Greg, your mind starts to wander as far as, huh, you know, would LeBron actually go as far as to potentially look into leaving the Los Angeles Lakers, which is a very intriguing possibility, but in this CBA, really, really difficult to pull off, you know, trading a guy with a no trade clause who's making north of $50 million.
Yep, we know what the Phoenix Suns are currently up against. Obviously, a little bit of a lesser player, but yeah, it's been a little bit rough for them as well. As joining me on the show, we've got Nick Whalen. He does great work over at Prop Points, our show from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern time here on the network. He's joining me on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And I thought that this was intriguing as well. Two teams that, let's call it what it is, we're probably not going to make the playoffs this year, but an intriguing deal with Colin Sexton going from the Utah Jazz on over to the Hornets for the Jazz. They're going to be picking up Yusef Nurkic. I want to get your thoughts here, because with the Hornets, I actually thought that they had a really good draft picking up Konkanepo. They get late in the first round as well, Liam McNeely from UConn. They did a great job in the second round with Sion James coming over as well. Now you add in their Colin Sexton, and size is going to be a little bit of an issue. You've got Ryan Kalkbrenner you pick, but I look at this Hornets backcourt and all of a sudden they've got some guards.
Yeah, you're right. This deal really came out of nowhere. I was sitting at the Brewers Rockies game at Miller Park earlier today, and I get this alert, you know, in the second inning, and had to, you know, kind of step aside and figure out what exactly was going on here. Really interesting deal. You know, both guys make almost the exact same money. They're both on expiring contracts. So as far as the, you know, the salary cap machinations go, it was kind of a one-to-one. I don't know exactly what Utah is doing here. You know, again, neither team is really clearing cap space. I know there's some initial reaction that, oh, this could be a precursor to another deal. That's possible. I mean, the reporting around this so far has just been that, yeah, Utah really likes Yusef Nurkic. And I do think he has become a little bit underrated. You know, he had that kind of sad tenure in Phoenix, and then, you know, wasn't playing all that often last year in Charlotte. But it's not like this is a guy who's 35 years old. Like, I still think he has some good years left. The question is, does it really matter? And that's kind of what you were alluding to, right? I mean, Utah is still so far away from contending for anything meaningful. The Western Conference is so stacked right now that it still feels like they're probably a bottom two team in that conference. So I'm not really sure what exactly this accomplishes for Utah in the short term, but all of a sudden, I mean, this Charlotte team, kind of intriguing. They still need to find some sort of answer at center. I don't know that Ryan Kalkbrenner is the full-time guy. You are getting Grant Williams back from injury, but that's really not all that exciting either. Obviously, they traded Mark Williams on draft night, so that's the big hole in this rotation. But LaMelo Ball, you get Brandon Miller back from injury, Colin Sexton, a proven scorer in this league. You bring in a shooter in Con Knipple. Miles Bridges is still a really productive player. I don't know exactly where this gets the Charlotte Hornets. You know, does this push him into play-in territory? Could they be the 6 or 7 seed in the Eastern Conference if things break right? Maybe. But I like this deal for Charlotte more than I did Utah.
Yep, I'm right there with you. And for the Charlotte Hornets, something we haven't been able to say in quite a while, they've picked up some wins here in the last few days. So congratulations to Charlotte. And this was, I thought, interesting as well. Staying out there in the Eastern Conference, an interesting trade with Lonzo Ball going on over to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Isaac Okoro is a take back there, a pair of former top five guys that, let's call it what it is, both of these guys have had a little bit of a tough time being out there on the floor. And I want to get your thoughts on this deal, because for the Cleveland Cavaliers, it feels like it's a buy low sort of spot on Lonzo Ball, where you don't know what you're going to get in terms of his health, but I mean, this could turn into be something very good if he is fully healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this was another one, you know, where you had two guys who are on very similar contracts. You know, both guys are under contract through 2026-27, but Lonzo Ball has a team option next year because of the injury history. That's the way that contract was negotiated. So to me, this is Cleveland basically giving up on Isaac Okoro, who was a top five pick. It wasn't a great draft. It just never really worked out for him in Cleveland. But I like this, you know, taking a shot on Lonzo Ball. You know, obviously there is massive injury risk here, but in terms of the financial commitment beyond this season, he's only making $10 million. You can get him off the books if he does suffer another injury or if it doesn't work out. I think Cleveland is bracing to lose Ty Jerome perhaps this offseason, you know, which you know, you bring in Lonzo Ball as kind of a natural replacement there. And I don't know if Lonzo's ever going to get back to the player that it looked like he was developing into, you know, in New Orleans, those early days in Chicago before the knee injuries really set in. But I like this for Cleveland. You know, it's a team that I think feels pretty good about its core, especially with, you know, the position that the Celtics and the Bucks and the Pacers are in right now. Obviously, you're disappointed to flame out in the playoffs in the second round, but I think you look around at the Eastern Conference and you feel pretty good about your chances to make another run next season. And this is the type of move to me that makes a ton of sense. You know, Isaac Okoro to me became pretty expendable, you know, especially after they traded for DeAndre Hunter. Those guys kind of do the same thing, but DeAndre Hunter is a much better shooter. You know, Okoro just never really added that to his game. So I like this a lot for Cleveland. For Chicago, don't really get it. You know, I guess you're getting a little bit younger with Isaac Okoro, but this is kind of another in a series of fairly confusing moves for the Bulls over the last few years.
Yeah, with the Chicago Bulls, they could use Michael Jordan right about now, because, man, it's been rough for them ever since he has left. So we are going to be seeing what they're going to be able to do. Perhaps it helps them with their floor spacing a little bit more. We're trying to look at some positives there. But, you know what, very good for Cleveland. And what is very good for the show is having Nick Whalen aboard. He does great work here at the network with prop points. And coming up next, how about if we dive in a little bit further with regards to what we saw in the NBA draft, and perhaps dive in on that Eastern Conference just a little bit more. Here on Cashing Out, I'm Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by this man on the Progressive Guest Line, as we've got Nick Whalen aboard. He does great work as one of the co-hosts of the show Prop Points here at the network, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And Nick, we were talking a little bit about the Eastern Conference, and we'll get back into it in a few minutes. But first things first, since we last spoke, we did see the NBA draft come and go. I know that you had some thoughts there, and I want to get your thoughts as to who some of the teams that you felt like were winners and losers were, because I thought it was a really interesting NBA draft where it felt like Ace Bailey held many of the cards, though in reality it was the Utah Jazz that held the cards.
Well, yeah, since we did our last Prop Point show on Friday, Greg, Ace Bailey has, in fact, reported to the Utah Jazz. That was still up in the air 48 hours ago. So, you know, the Jazz in some ways kind of called Ace Bailey's bluff, although to me it was never really clear exactly what Ace Bailey wanted throughout this entire process. You know, it was almost like he was trying to tank his own stock to fall in the draft, but then, you know, didn't really make it clear exactly where he wanted to end up. Really, the only thing that was clear to me was that he wanted to go to a situation where he could kind of thrive as a primary guy right away. And, you know, he may not be thrilled geographically with where he ended up, but you look at this Utah roster, we just talked about him, you know, trading Colin Sexton away. This is a team that has opportunity, you know? So I think if the Jazz could kind of convince Ace Bailey to fully buy in, which I think they will, you know, I think he'll settle in. I think he'll realize that Utah is a fine organization and he will embrace that. I think he's mostly getting what he wanted here. You know, maybe he was trying to steer himself to Washington or New Orleans or Brooklyn. That's kind of the word on the street. But I don't think the Jazz roster is that much better than any of those teams. So you know, I think there is a world in which Ace Bailey is playing 25 to 30 minutes right away. You know, Laurie Markkanen, who knows how many games he plays next season. So if the whole goal for Ace Bailey was to get somewhere where he can, you know, be a quote unquote star right away, you know, see as many minutes as he can as a rookie, I think he did ultimately accomplish that. You know, in terms of other winners, you know, we mentioned the Charlotte Hornets in the last segment. It's rare that we would offer any praise for this organization, but I do think the Hornets made the right pick with Con Knipl at number four. I like some of the moves that they've made over these last few weeks. You know, they bring in Liam McNeely late in the draft as well. It's a team that certainly needs shooting. They need to find some defenders as well. That's going to be a concern for one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA last season. But it does feel like the Charlotte Hornets are at least on the right track. You know, the team that baffled me most, Greg, and I think everybody is still wondering how this was the case, the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yes.
You know, taking Jeremiah Fears at seven, that's totally fine. You know, maybe he was best player available, whatever. Trading back up to 13 for Derek Queen and giving up the unprotected pick. And, you know, the fact that it's not just your own pick, it's the Milwaukee pick as well. Both of those teams, you know, it's pretty easy to see, you know, things going awry next season. Let's say Giannis misses, I don't know, 25 games at some point or asks for a trade midseason. The Bucks could absolutely be a lottery team. New Orleans is probably a bottom three, bottom four team in the Western Conference. So I have no idea what the New Orleans Pelicans are doing. I like Derek Queen. I don't think he's a future superstar. I don't think he's the type of player that you give up that kind of haul to acquire. For the most part, though, I came out of the draft and, you know, you're kind of nodding along. You're like, yeah, I like that pick. I like that pick. There weren't too many teams that I would say, you know, completely knocked it out of the park, but I certainly came away scratching my head with what the New Orleans Pelicans did.
Yeah, and the entire offseason for the Pelicans has been a little bit confusing. They now have a pool party as well, yeah. So I mean, congratulations to them, but with the NBA draft, I'm right there with you. I thought that was the most jarring thing that we saw, and I do think that it's interesting that you saw Tavon Peter, who wasn't even a starter at Liberty, get drafted in the second round. Good three-point shooter, but yeah, that one was a little bit confusing as well, but I'm so glad that you mentioned the Utah Jazz as well, because I do think that for Ace Bailey, he does have the potential to be able to really bust out, and I think that it's an interesting organization moving forward because they do have a lot of draft capital. You mentioned it, they're going to be rough this season, but I could see that honestly being a team that 2-3 years from now, they're able to build themselves up and they could maybe become, I mean, not the OKC Thunder or anything like that, but a team that rises up and they just progressively get better and better.
But they got nowhere to go but up. You know, they've been doing the tanking thing for the last couple of seasons. It has not really resulted in the draft picks that they thought it would. But I think Utah in some ways is lucky that Ace Bailey was on the board, right? They're lucky that this whole thing transpired, because I think a month or two ago, it felt like a given that he was going to be maybe the third or fourth pick at worst. And, you know, look, I think Ace Bailey is either going to be really good or really bad. That's what I've been telling people. Like, I don't see there being an in-between here. This whole thing has been so strange that it would be surprising to me if he's just like, you know, Andrew Wiggins or Tobias Harris. He's just like an okay role player in the NBA. Like, it either feels like it's going to hit or it's going to crash and burn. And if you're Utah, you don't have a whole lot of avenues to getting superstar potential players in your door. You know, I think this is the right type of swing to take if you're the Utah Jazz. You're still years away from contention. You know, I like some of the moves that they've made on the margins over the years. You know, the Isaiah Collier pick, you know, late in round one last year, that looks pretty good. Walter Clayton at 18 this year, you know, I think that's the type of guy that at least provides some stability when you take a risk on Ace Bailey at number five. But I think that's the kind of swing you have to take if you're Utah, because this is not one of those organizations that can just say, oh, well, we'll just go sign somebody in free agency, you know, and they've tried to play the lottery. It hasn't worked out for them. So I applaud the Utah Jazz for kind of calling Ace Bailey's bluff. But the overall point here is that this team is still very far away to me from contending. And, you know, part of it starts with just staying healthy, right? They had so many injuries last season with Markkanen and Collins, and Walker Kessler's always banged up. But the bar to clear in the Western Conference is so high right now, just to be a play-in team in the West compared to the East.
Yep, I'm right there with you, and I'm so glad they bring that up, because we'll talk about the East here in a second, but first things first, you want to be taking a look at ProfitX, because baseball season, it is now on, and with ProfitX, it is a peer-to-peer exchange available in 40-plus states. You're able to bet on baseball all season long with the first of its kind in terms of a peer-to-peer exchange out there in the United States, and you're able to make your sports picks against other fans rather than the sports books, and that guarantees you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds. Download ProfitX with the promo code of VSIN today, and you're able to earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month, as it is joining me right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, Nick Whalen, who does great work with our show here at the network, Prop Points, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And how about if we take a look at the East? Because right now, the short shots to be able to win the Eastern Conference, that'd be the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks. In a lot of places, you're finding both of these teams right around about +$8, +850 to be able to win the title. And I'm not sure how you take a look at things, but I think there should be a little bit more separation between the Cavaliers and the Knicks. And I do think that for the Knicks, I have my concerns with them. And I take a look at that East, and in terms of the number two team to the Cleveland Cavaliers, I do think that a team like the Orlando Magic might be able to rise up and really be that top contender.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm with you. I think there should be a little more separation between Cleveland and the Knicks. The Knicks do not have a head coach right now. That's a bit of a problem. This is a team that doesn't have a deep bench. And you know, obviously, our last memory of the Cavaliers is that, you know, that sad second round series against Indiana. But they had a ton of injuries. This is a team that won 64 games in the regular season. Could have won a few more if they had really pushed for it toward the end of the year. And you know, we just talked about bringing in Lonzo Ball. They'll bring back basically that entire core. I think Cleveland, to me, is the clear favorite right now. Orlando, you know, you can get him at +550 to win the Eastern Conference. I am very intrigued by the Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, Desmond Bane core. You get Jalen Suggs back from injury. This team needs to add depth, though. That's the thing. I mean, they're basically a five-player team right now, and you're relying on, you know, Anthony Black and, you know, guys, Jet Howard, you know, guys who barely played over the last couple of years to now give you real minutes. So I think Orlando's a team that has to be aggressive. It has to be smart once free agency opens, and in terms of adding some role players, you know, they really need to build out that bench. If they can do that, I think they are just as much in the mix as anybody in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, the other team, Greg, that I would keep an eye on, the Atlanta Hawks, 22-1 right now to win the Eastern Conference. I think that's another team that, you know, could be one more piece away from really flipping the script. I love the dice roll on Kristaps Porzingis. I know, you know, when you think of Porzingis, you think he's barely on the court. You know, he had that mysterious illness. If he can get past that, I think that was a steal for the Atlanta Hawks. Basically gave up nothing to get him. They got off of the Terrence Mann contract in the process. And Porzingis is an expiring contract. If it doesn't work out, it's not going to cripple them going forward. You know, you forget Jalen Johnson basically missed half of the season. You know, you have Dyson Daniels, who's developed into maybe the best perimeter defender in the NBA. So I think Atlanta, you know, much like Orlando, if they can make the right moves, if they can bring in, you know, one or two veterans on the minimum or close to the minimum in free agency, guys that really hit, the Hawks to me are the best value at 22-1. I'm not saying I would pick them right now to win the Eastern Conference. There are a lot of hurdles to clear there, but I think there is value on Atlanta.
Well, we've got about 1 minute for this team, and we could use about 100 minutes for them. What are your thoughts on the 76ers and what they might be able to yield this year? Because I think they might be the most volatile team in the East.
Impossible to evaluate. Impossible to evaluate. You know, at RotoWire right now, you know, we're working on our player projections for next season for fantasy basketball. And we're just throwing up our hands when it comes to the Sixers. It's like, all right, how many games is Embiid going to play? Okay, how does that impact everybody else on this roster? There's a case to be made that the Sixers are still the most talented team alive right now in the Eastern Conference with all the injuries around there. But does anybody trust Joel Embiid to play 55 plus games in the regular season to put the Sixers in a position where they'll be a top three or four seed? Beyond that, do you trust Joel Embiid to stay healthy for an entire 2 month playoff run? I certainly don't. Do you trust Paul George to get back to the player that he was 2 or 3 years ago? I'm not sure I do. I love Tyrese Maxey. You know, I love Quentin Grimes. I love Jared McCain. Those are some nice ancillary pieces, but this team, for better or for worse, is tethered to Paul George and Joel Embiid. And if you don't trust those guys, I don't know if you can bet the Sixers right now.
Yep, I am right there with you, but we can always trust you, Nick. You do great work here at the network, and always appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Always great to be able to have Nick Whalen aboard, and coming up next, let's turn it forward to the Monday baseball slate right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm Visa, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be joined in the last two segments by Nick Whalen, who does such great work here at the network, along with RotoWire, hosts the show Prop Points. You're able to catch at 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, here at the network. So, big thanks to Nick. By the way, a fellow Wisconsinite, he was at that Brewers versus Rockies game, he told me, and, well, that was not great if you bet on the Brewers like I did on the run line. So, Hopefully we can bounce back a little bit more there, and we'll be looking at this team on the run line to be able to do so with. As for the Philadelphia Phillies, it's wheeling and dealing time. 9:51, 9:52 on the card. It is Zach Wheeler going for the Philadelphia Phillies against the San Diego Padres. Matt Waldron, the knuckleballer, will be getting his first start of the season for San Diego. And right now, Padres in that neighborhood about a plus 180 to a plus 190, neighborhood about minus 210, minus 225, that number on the Phillies. And you're able to get a pretty reasonable run line here with the Phillies. Right now here at Circa, I'm seeing this at a minus 105. Most other places is a minus 110. Really wouldn't want to go past a minus 110 with regards to this run line, but and especially if you're able to get the minus 105 right now, I am in on the Philadelphia Phillies. Keep in mind, Zach Wheeler, towards the end of May, early June, he was on the paternity list for a little bit of time, so congratulations to him. But I mean, in his first four starts since coming back, has looked like one of the dominant pitchers of all of baseball. Two earned runs allowed in his last four starts, and the Phillies are really getting some good starting pitching. Like I mentioned it at the top of the show, Ranger Suarez and what he's been able to do. Nine earned runs allowed in his last 10 starts. Oh, by the way, what I left out when I was talking about Ranger Suarez in that first segment as well is that in those last 10 starts, six plus innings in every one of those starts as well. So the Phillies aren't needing to dive into their bullpen too much, which that's a good thing because this bullpen has been rough to say the least. Right now you've got one guy in the bullpen that has given you a sub 350 ERA. That'd be Orion Kerkering. They had to use him up on Sunday, and they also had to use up Matt Strom, and that leaves you with these guys like Tanner Banks, Jordan Romano, mix and match guys, Max Lazor that you really don't find to be very trustworthy. And for Wheeler, he has been very trustworthy. By the way, if you take a look at the Cy Young Award odds, you've got quite a few of the Philadelphia Phillies pitchers sprinkled right there at the top. Wheeler is right now that number two shot, 4-1. Christopher Sanchez, he's over at 18-1. And I mean, I was mentioning it, he's probably not going to be able to win the award, but Ranger Suarez, he's way down the list as well. Probably missed too many starts to be able to make himself eligible for this award. But I mean, you're able to get him at like 90-1. I don't necessarily think that that's a world's worst shot if he continues to do what he's doing right now. So I think that that is very intriguing. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, it's also a case where the just overall power numbers have not been great with this team. You look at them in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis, they're a bottom 12 team in the big leagues. You expect a little bit more firepower from this team. Now, part of it is because Bryce Harper currently out of the fold for the team, so that has been affecting them a little bit. And this has been a different team when they've been at home rather than away from home in terms of run scoring. They're averaging 5.2 runs per game at home, a little bit under 4.1 runs per game away from home. But still plenty of guys move the line, despite the fact that you're not getting that home run power, like Nick Castellanos, Trey Turner, both of these guys in north of 275. Alec Bohm has been as well. JT Realmuto has been a little bit better, but it's been a little bit of a less than savory season for him. And for the Padres, this team, obviously, typically, it's a little bit better when they're away from home, but that has actually been the reverse this year. This year, they're averaging about 3.9 runs per game away from home, closer to about 4.4 runs per game at home. You'd think that playing out there at Petco, that you'd have reverse splits here, but for the Padres, just not a lot of power out of this team either. You've had Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, along with, as well, Gavin Sheets. I'll give you at least 12 home runs, but they just have not gotten anything out of the catcher spot for one. They were banking on Jason Hayward and company in the outfield, and none of these guys have been able to come through for you. Now, a big reason why I do like this under is because you do have a Padres bullpen that has been really good. The likes of a long reliever in Audrey Morahone, Jason Adam being able to give you a sub 325. You're right, they do have a closer problem with Robert Suarez. Blew another game on Sunday. That's now three blown saves over the last 2 weeks for him. So that is a little bit of reason to be concerned here. But still, a top six team in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA for Matt Waldron. He's coming up after he made 8 minor league rehab starts. Now, that means that he was spending more time at the minor league level than he needed to because they probably didn't think that he was that trustworthy. But, and that said, he was getting strikeouts at the minor league level. If you look at the actual, like, strikeout-to-walk ratio numbers, things like that, wasn't too bad. Was rocking about a 5 ERA. Part of that might have been because he was pitching for many of his starts at the Pacific Coast League for El Paso, the old Chihuahuas, so always a fun mascot there. And as we know in the PCL, if you're actually having a 5 ERA in the PCL, you're not doing too bad. But with having Matt Waldron out there on the mound, it makes things more volatile because he's a knuckleballer. And there's nothing else more to be said, because with knuckleballers, some nights you are just completely on. You're blowing everyone away. And then some nights You just don't have it, and you get completely banged around like a human pinata. But I do think that for the Padres, with this being his first MLB start of the season, if he is getting banged around like a pinata, short leash there, they've got a relatively solid bullpen, so I'm seeing that total of 9. I'm going to be in on this total under. And for the Phillies, I just think that Zach Wheeler just continues to get the job done, continues to dominate. I do like the Phillies on the run line here. What else I like is the fact that there's a new sports betting market in town, and it's called XCUTTA. XCUTTA. XCUTTA is a sports calcutta that is combining the adrenaline of live auctions and strategy of sports prognostication. You're able to create your own XCUTTA auctions for you and your crew for any sport and any sporting event. Football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, Super Bowl, World Series, March Madness, Wimbledon, and even your own local golf tournament. Create your own private or public auctions. Create secondary markets for aftermarket buying and selling. Over 1,000 teams, players, and drivers in the database, with you having the ability to add even more. And get free practice auctions running daily, 3, 6, and 9 p.m. Eastern Time at xcuta.com. And for 3 months of free betting subscription, email support at xcutta.com and mention VSIN, that is V-S-I-N, xcuta.com, the future of futures wagering. As it is, cashing out right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Got to break down the Phillies game there. And how about if we stay out there in the great state of Pennsylvania? We'll give an ode to those good people out there, because you saw the Pittsburgh Pirates absolutely laying base the New York Mets over the weekend. They outscored them in that series 30-4. Now they look to keep the pendulum moving forward against the St. Louis Cardinals. It's like, to utilize that term from Cam Newton, he would always say, keep the pendulum moving forward. Little did he know it also moved backwards. And it might be going backwards on the Pittsburgh Pirates here, as you got Andrew Heaney on the bump for them, and Eric Fetty is on the bump for St. Louis. St. Louis, about a minus 120 to a minus 125 favorite. They were a plus 110 to plus 105 is that number on Pittsburgh. The total on this game, it is 8.5, and I'm willing to bank on the St. Louis Cardinals here. Set them at a minus 136. Now, Eric Fetty has not been blowing guys away or anything like that. He's only getting right around 6 strikeouts per 9 innings, and contrary to popular belief, neither is Andrew Heaney. Heaney, throughout his career, has always been a high strikeout guy. Typically, he's giving you north of 9 strikeouts per 9. This year, that's down to right around about 7 to 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. And things have completely toilet bowled for our good friend and Mr. Heaney. About 14 runs allowed in his last two games. That said, he has been a whole heck of a lot better when he has been at home rather than away from home. For Mr. Andrew Heaney, when he's been at home, this goes down to a 2.95 ERA, giving up 1.1 home runs per 9 innings, north of 1.5 home runs per 9 innings, north of a 5 ERA when he's away from home. Meanwhile, you've got a guy in Eric Fetty who's been actually doing a little bit better when he's been away from home as well. Right now, overall, for the season, a 4.11 ERA, but that goes down to a 3 ERA, 0.7 home runs per 9 innings when he is on the road, and gets a face-off against the Pittsburgh Pirates team that, despite scoring 30 runs in their last three games against the New York Mets, this team is dead last in the National League in terms of runs per game, flat out because they don't have power. You've got O'Neill Cruz, Brian Reynolds, along with Andrew McCutchen as the only three guys on the roster with north of 4 home runs this year. This game is going to be played on June 30th, the last day of June, and yeah, you need a little bit more there. I mean, you just have a lot of guys that aren't moving the line. Like even Cruz, who I mentioned before, he, Alexander Canario, Jared Trollo, Henry Davis, Tommy Pham, whole bunch of guys hitting a 230 or lower for this team. And for St. Louis, it's not like they're necessarily the monsters of the Midway. They don't have Mark McGwire on the roster anymore, so that's a little bit of an issue. And for the St. Louis Cardinals, they are in the bottom 8 in the big leagues in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis. You've had Wilson Contreras be the main power source. He's up to 11 home runs. You've had Nolan Arenado supply 10 as well. Both of these guys hitting in the neighborhood about 250 with Contreras. He's starting to give you a little bit more on base. You expect a little bit more out of them, but despite the fact this has been a team that's been in the top half of the big leagues in terms of runs per game, you've got Alec Burleson along with Brendan Donovan, who have both been able to supply north of a 275 average. Mason Wynn has been able to give you a little bit more as well. And for the catcher spot, Yoan Pozo has actually been solid. They did have to put Ivan Herrera on the injury list. That hurt them a little bit. But for the St. Louis Cardinals as well, this bullpen is rounding into form. Ryan Helsley blew a few saves towards like the beginning part of June, back half of May. He looks to be rounding into form. And then you've got the likes of Jojo Romero, Kyle Leahy, Phil Matone, who have been able to give you sub 350 ERA. If you look since May 1st, this Pirates team has been a top 8 team in terms of bullpen ERA. David Benar has been solid. The former Dodgers and Caleb Ferguson, along with Dennis Santana, they're giving you solid innings. They didn't have to utilize too many of their trustworthy guys because they completely lambasted the New York Mets on Sunday as well. So I like this total under. I set mine at an 8.1. one. And with the Cardinals, I'm going to be looking at the money line as well. And coming up next, we'll take a look at some more Monday baseball and take a look at what we all saw on Sunday in terms of NBA, both free agency and the trade market, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.